begin with the Mishnah in Brachos. The Mishnah is in the fifth parak. And the Mishnah reads, Maskirin Gvuros Gishomen Mitiyat Hamesim. We recite a formula in the liturgy in the bracha of Tiyat Hamesim, and the formula is one everyone here knows well, namely, Mashiv Haruach Morid Hagoshim. Then it's a shoal in Hagshomen Mitiyat Hashonim, but we actually request rain in another bracha in the Shemona Esrei, and that's the bracha Birchas Hashanah, where we recite the same Talmud of bracha, or the same bracha as the case may be. Now this Mishnah is undisputed. It's brought to halacha in all the various Jewish codes of law, and you'll find it in the Shulchan Aruch, Aruch Chaim, Siman Kof Yodalud, or 114, where again it's spelled out clearly that starting from Sukkot and through Pesach, we recite the formula Mashiv Haruach Morid Hagoshim. Of course, there's no vocalization of the Talmud or the Mishnah, and there's no vocalization in our printed text of the Jewish codes of law. And so it says that we recite a formula, and the formula is Mashiv Haruach Morid Hei Gimel Shin Mem. Of course, it doesn't tell us how to pronounce that word, and it's the issue of how to pronounce that word that will occupy us for some time tonight. The Gashemites, those who insist on reciting it with a Kamite under the Gimel, adduce as evidence to their practice the fact that in Biblical Hebrew, anywhere where a verse, a word which we call a segele, a word that has three letters, and the first two have a segel under them, like Geshem, Yeled, Melech, so on, whenever those words occur under, with an esnachta under them, or at the end of a verse, the first segel tends to change into a kamat. It's lengthened into a kamat, and so it would become Goshen instead of Geshe. And indeed, we actually have a biblical verse with that very word, the word for rain, with the word occurring at the end of the verse, so we have it under a sof pasuk, Zechariah 14:17, and the end of the pasuk is V'lo Alehem Yiyeh HaGoshen. And of course, Tanakh is vocalized. The Balei HaMasorah, the Masoretes, who preserved the Tanakh for us early on in the medieval period, wrote the manuscript with little dots. They put in the Patach Tetzera, and so I know the length of that, but they wrote that down and handed it over from generation to generation. That's why we know how to lengthen today. Sefer Torah, for example, the Balkore depends upon Tav Hebrew Publishing Company or other Hebrew publishing companies for their tikkun. And of course, if you ask the president of Tav, who looks to be a good friend of mine, he wouldn't know whether it should be a Kamach or a Patach or how you vocalize Tanakh, but he simply copied over from earlier printed editions, and those earlier printed editions are copied from manuscripts that existed before printing was invented in the 15th century. The argument would be then, based on biblical Hebrew, whenever you have a pausal form, that's the technical term, segol is lengthened to a kamat, and therefore instead of geshem, you should recite goshem. And since here we have a nice formula in the davening, and it says seems to stand by itself, mashiv haruach umori hei gimel shin men, that's the equivalent of the sof pasuk, and we should read it hagoshem. The segelites, the geshemites, right, those who prefer the segel under the gimel, will argue that there's no pause here. It's not a biblical verse. It's, first of all, this is Siddur. Who says that the rules governing biblical Hebrew apply to the Siddur? Maybe they don't. Siddur is not biblical Hebrew. Second of all, even if those rules did apply, who says this is the end of the verse? It's Mashiv Haruach Umorid Hageshem Metalkeh Chayim B'Chesed. We're describing God. And we're praising God. And we say about God that God sustains the living What else does God do? He causes the winds to blow. He causes the rain to fall. Morid Hageshem. This is not to be separated from what comes afterwards. Therefore, there's no reason to lengthen the segol into a coma. Those are the basic arguments of the two schools of thought. If one looks at the Rush in his Tur Shulchan Aruch, the Rush was writing at the end of the 13th century, beginning of the 14th century. Actually, the Tur is his son. The Tur cites his father, Rabbeinu Osher, in the Tur, and in Orach Chaim Siman Kuf Yudalid, the Tur says in the name of his father. So now we're back, as I say, to the end of the 13th century. Because of Adoni Ovizal, Hod Yamrinon, Lo Amar Morid Hageshe, Machvir Noso, Hainu Kishimusayim Kol Habrocha. Here's a rule: if you forget to say it, you can go back and say it. But there's also a rule that says you can't go back and say it, right? When do we say that you go back? You go back to the beginning of Shemona Esrei if you already said Mechaye HaMesim. But if you didn't recite the formula Mechaye HaMesim in Shemona Esrei and you forgot to say Mashiach, before you said Mechaye HaMesim, Yomar B'mokom Sheniska, wherever you remember, you simply recite Mashiach Ruach Umbari Hagoshem Regeshem. The rabbis didn't say precisely where you should say it. They just said you should say it before Mechayim Eitzim somewhere. They didn't say where besoch habracha you have to say it. Elo amru maskirin gevuros kshamim b'tias amesim. Elo shenogu lo amru l'fnei mechal kel chayim l'fi shab shamim kal kola uparnasim. It is a practice to say it before the words Mechal Kel Chayim because rain is a kind of Mechal Kel Chayim. God sustains life. How does God sustain life? One way he does it is through providing rain. So I'm simply reading this to you so you should know that the plain sense of the Rush seems to be that there is a connection between Mashiach V'ruach Morid Hageshem and what immediately follows Mechal Kel Chayim B'chesed. If there is a connection, that would be an argument in favor of pronouncing it how?
Geshem.
Now, most Sidurim, and I see most of us here are over 10 or 15, so most American Sidurim that we all were raised on have Geshem. And I have no idea what the practice is in the Young Israel of Hillcrest, exclusive Ashkenaz, right?
Yeah.
What is the practice? Anybody know? Gushim. Okay, so we have a Gushmite audience. I'll be very careful what I say now. Most American Sidurim have Gushim. Almost all Sidurim that I can recall as I grew up had Gushim. It's only very recently that you will find American Sidurim with Geshem. Art Scroll has Geshem. But, excuse me? Okay. But which will justify the comma. Good. Okay, gotcha. The question is, how reliable are American Siddurim? Would you want to lay down your life for the accuracy of an American Siddur? This is the question. But it's true. Most American Siddurim say gotcha. Now, just to show you how unreliable Siddurim are, I will give you one quick sample from history. This is an American edition of a siddur that really was first printed in Europe. It's called Siddur Beis Yaakov. It's a very popular siddur. It's an extensive commentary on the siddur. This particular copy was published in New York by the Zafragaff Company. It's been reprinted many, many times. And if you read the Shemona Esrei here, or look at any Shemona Esrei, you will see that it says, Mashiach V'ruach Umari Hagashem with a comma. As most American Siddurim, as I already indicated, tend to have. However, this is no ordinary Siddur. This is Siddur Beis Yaakov, the Siddur of the house of Jacob, and those of you who are up front can actually see what it says under it. Siddur Beis Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov Emden. This is the Siddur of Rabbi Yaakov Emden. Now, Rabbi Yaakov Emden lived in the 18th century, in Altena, in what is today Germany, what was then Denmark, and he printed the Siddur in his own house, not this copy, the first version of it. He printed it in his own house, and this is supposed to be a faithful replica of the Siddur printed by Rabbi Yaakov Emden, and this has Goshen with the Gimel, with a Hamad under the Gimel. Here I have a photo-mechanical reproduction of the original Siddur that was printed in Rabbi Yaakov Emden's house. And Rabbi Yaakov Emden himself set the type and put in the vocalization. He tells you in the introduction to the Siddur, one of the most important aspects of my Siddur is I'm going to make sure that every letter in this Siddur has the right Nikud under it, the right vocalization, so that Jews praying will pray with the proper pronunciation. And if you look in Shemoneh Esrei over here, under Mashu Horuach, it says Geshen with a sebo, and I'm going to pass this around so I don't want anybody to take my word. See with your own eyes. I'll also pass around the forgery that you can buy in your local store, a mistaken edition of Rabbi Yaakov Emden's Siddur. That's a terrible thing to do, by the way. That's neither of these. That's their Siddur. I may get to that later. There are others. Now, I'll give you a sample of some recent halakhic discussion. Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked to decide the issue, and in the Igros Moshe or Achayim Chelet Dalet, Siman Mem, this was published in 1981 in New York, Rav Moshe says very simply, Bedvar Morid Hatei Gimel Shin Mem, Sorech Lomar Vekamat, Tachas HaGimel, Ki Sof Inyan Hu, Shetzorech Lomar Vekamat. Moshe says it's a simple matter, and he decides the issue in favor of young Israel Hillcrest, that you should recite it Goshen, precisely because it stands by itself, and the word HaGoshen is the end of a verse, as it were, and so the Sego is lengthened to a comma. In 1979, a Jew in Jerusalem published a series of articles and then a series of books arguing that the only correct pronunciation is Geshen, Mashiv Ruach Umarir HaGeshen. And this man has devoted his entire life to persuading every Jew, whoever they may be, to say Mashiv Ruach Umarir HaGeshen and not Goshen. The essential argument that was put forward by this rabbi in Israel was that if you examine all Siddurim that were ever printed, every Siddur has Geshen. Until the year 1785, when for the first time a Maskil published a Siddur, a member of Moses Mendelssohn's entourage. His name was Isaac Satanoff, and you can learn more about him by looking him up in an encyclopedia. He was a well-known Hebrew writer and Maskil. And in 1785, he published the Siddur that eventually would become the Avodas Yisrael, or Beer's, what's known as Beer's Siddur. This is a forerunner of it. He published a Siddur called Vayetar Yitzchak in Berlin. And there, for the first time in history, we see Mashiv Ruach Umorid HaGashem. And he wrote a note under the word HaGashem. He had a commentary to this Siddur, and in the commentary writes that it ought to be HaGashem because in Biblical Hebrew, and then he cites the verse that I mentioned earlier in Zechariah, in Biblical Hebrew, whenever a segol of a segolite comes under, comes by an esnachta or by a self-pasuk, it is lent into a kama. Applying the rules of biblical Hebrew to the siddur, it should be recited Hagasha. He printed Hagasha for the first time. He then influenced later siddurim, especially in Germany, specifically what's known as the Heidenheim siddur in the 19th century. One of the greatest of all printers in Germany was Wolf Heidenheim. And Wolf Heidenheim says that I am leaning on the shoulders of Vayez Har Yitzchak, Isaac Satanov, and since he wrote Goshen, I will write Goshen. And then along came Yitzchak Baer, another German in the 19th century, a German Jew, who published a standard siddur, which is used in many synagogues in the United States today. And in his siddur, he printed Goshen, and in the moment the commentary said, as you will see in the Vayez Har Yitzchak and Heidenheim and so on, this became the standard practice in German siddurim. The first Jews really to come to the United States, as you well know, the first Jews who thrived here, the Sephardim were the first Jews, but the first Ashkenazim to get here and thrive, especially in the 19th century, were German Jews who came here before the East European Jews who first came here in 1881 in large numbers. They influenced siddurim and how they were produced here in the United States, and almost all American siddurim until very recently read Hagoshen, precisely as any siddurim printed in Germany in the 19th century read Hagoshen. But, argued this rabbi in Jerusalem, we Jews are very careful about our practices. There's always a memory bank somewhere. There are always some Jews who remember what the old practice was before this change was made by the Maskilim. And he began examining manuscripts and old commentaries on the siddur. And he found here and there a small, quiet voice in every generation that would raise up and say, what's going on? Our fathers and our grandfathers always said Geshem. What's this new custom that's suddenly entering into the siddurim, this new printing that we see, Goshen? And he cites some evidence for this, and I will give you a few samples. Beginning of the 19th century, there was a rabbi, a Polish rabbi, who was named Rabbi Eliezer Lev, and he wrote a famous book of responses, Shelotu Tshuvos Shemen Rokea. And he writes as follows. This is the beginning of the 19th century. Ludati gam hamishanim lomar morid hagoshem bekomat. Those who are changing the nusach and are saying goshem instead of geshem, lo tov heimosim. Here we have the first protest. Notice it becomes the beginning of the 19th century. When do we first see hagoshem? 1785, at the end of the 18th century. Here's the first response. Ludati gam hamishanim lomar morid hagoshem bekomat lo tov heimosim l'shanos hanuscha hayishana haregila b'tichol Yisrael. They don't do well to change the practice of all Israel. And that practice is to say Geshem. Makol shekein mashir ziku kol Yisrael l'shanim kadmoniyos. And in ancient times, all of Israel said Lomar u'morid ha-geshem v'segol, v'chein nitpas v'chol ha-sforam ha-kadmonim. All the old siddurim had geshem. Shein v'zeh rak, sh'al pi ha-klal ha-munach u'medaktikim, sh'bo b'sof ha-inyan, yishlomar ha-goshem v'kamat, se'ein l'shanos ha-nuskla v'ha-nidr. We may not change the received practice of our fathers, which was to recite mashir ruach u'morid ha-geshem. The argument has to do with grammar, has to do with the fact that you compare siddur to biblical Hebrew, he says. That's a false argument. Carries no weight against minhag, the practice of all Israel, to recite Geshem. In Hungary, in the beginning of this century, there was a very famous rabbi in Munkács, the Munkács Rebbe, the Minchas Elozer, Rav Chaim Elozer Shapira. And he took this to heart, and he instituted Geshem. He would not allow Goshem. And he wrote in many of his various pamphlets, and in Sharif's tshuva, it's a very long tshuva, arguing that the only correct reading is Mashiach Ruach Umarid Hageshem. And now we know this is a practice now in Hungary. This is the ancient practice, apparently, in Germany, in Eastern Europe, and voices are beginning to be heard that we need to revert back to the old practice, abandon Goshen, and recite Geshem. This Jew in Israel, his name was Rabbi Chaim Krauss, no relative to the rabbi of Israel, I asked him, and his name is Rabbi Chaim Krauss, and he's been eminently successful, so that, to give you a sample of what's happening, he wrote a letter to Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, the late Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Torah Vadas. Rabbi Kamenetsky's response is printed in one of the volumes that Rabbi Krauss printed. It reads as follows, a beautiful letter. Yaakov writes, I remember that the Alta Slabotka, who was the Mashkiach in the Slabotka Yeshiva in Lithuania, he was very precise in how he recited the prayers. Yaakov remembers that in Slabotka, the Mashkiach used to say Geshem. When I myself examined the matter, there isn't any doubt about it, that the proper pronunciation is Geshem. There's a direct connection, and therefore it should be pronounced Geshem. And Rabbi Yaakov couldn't understand how it's possible that anybody would have come along and instituted Goshen. And he offers a very lovely explanation. When, at the end of Sukkot, on Shmini Atzeres, you announce for the first time that you're going to say Mashiv Ruach Umarid Hageshem, that's not connected to Mechal Tachayim B'Chesed. That's separate. There it's proper to read it Goshen. So the shul crier who announces out loud that you should read Mashiv Ruach Umarid Hageshem, the practice was, he would say Goshen, and there it's correct to say Goshen. Unfortunately, everybody was misled by that and thought that when you say Shmona Esrei, you're supposed to say Goshen. But in Shmona Esrei, it's connected to Mechal Tachayim B'Chesed, and you say Geshem. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. One of the greatest gedolim of this century was Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, Rav Velvel. Rav Velvel was the Rav of Brisk, a son of Rav Chaim of Brisk, who left Brisk during the war years, eventually made his way to Yerushalayim, and he settled in Jerusalem and started the Brisk dynasty again in Jerusalem. It becomes very important for our purposes to know what was the Brisker minhag. Well, and of course, this rabbi went and investigated to see what Rav Velvel's practice was. And we're told as follows, and I'm reading it to you exactly as it appears here. Agon Rav Ephraim Bordyansky. Rav Velvel died in 1959, so he could no longer be consulted when this book was written. However, there are enough living witnesses who could testify. So what our author did was, he consulted a student of Rav Velvel. Agon Rav Ephraim Bordyansky Shlita, Shehoya Mekurova, Nivoy Beitzel Shalarav Mikris, Agon Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, Hayik shebiker etzel hanal ba'achas ha-shabbosos kilei l'spalel filos musuf l'fnei ha-tevot. There was a minyan in Rebbe's house. This particular rabbi testified that he was once invited to daven for the Yombud, musuf, at the Brister minyan. V'hiz here also ha-gon Reb Yitzchak Zev al-shnei dvarim. And before he started musuf, he received a warning from Rebbe as to how to proceed with the services. And there were two parts to the warning. Part one, Shiyaktid lomar mashiv ruach umorid ha-geshem b'segol. Make sure that when you recite mashiv ruach, you say geshem. And the other one had to do with kedusha, which doesn't concern us at this time. Just to show you how far things went with regard to the success of Rabbi Krauss in this campaign. In the first of the three books that he wrote on the subject, Birchos HaChaim, he prints a letter from probably the greatest post-Sefer alive today, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, in Yerushalayim. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is a German Jew, and he writes as follows. Dear Rabbi Krauss, Acharei Grisha Shlomo HaTov, Kigolos, Abiyah Bazeh Esdati, Afshin Doli HaTorah Kvar Nosnu Haskamasam L'Dvorov. You already have the approval of many rabbis, you don't need my approval. In kol zeh ne'etarti la'chzarasol, nonetheless I respond to your request. V'nini bo'ti Yehuda l'hodiya da'at she'at ko ho'yisi rogia lomar ha'goshen b'kamat tachas ha'gimur. Shlomo Zalman says, even though my whole life I always said mashav ruach umorid ha'goshen, Bram Liacha Shekharosi is Kola Omer Bukuntroso Akoshi is Gifo Sakhaim, but after I read your book and your pamphlet, it's Khalti Lomar Besegol. I converted. And I now recite Mashav Ruach Umorir Hageshen. This is quite an amazing feat, an accomplishment on the part of the Chaim Krauss. Ki adiktuk hayoser godol, the greatest diktuk in the world, the greatest grammar you see is to listen to the rabbis. And if the rabbis decide that a proper pronunciation is Geshem, so be it. Yaakov Kamenetsky said it should be Geshem, the Brisker said it should be Geshem, a man by the name of Rav Shach has a letter here and says you should say Mashiach Umorid HaGeshem, and Rabbi Auerbach also now agrees, despite everything he knew in the past, he will now on recite Geshem. Now, nothing ever is simple in Yerushalayim. And with the same inspiration and zeal that led Rabbi Chaim Krauss to publish some 6 books and pamphlets in favor of Geshem, another rabbi would arrive and publish just as many books and pamphlets in response, proving that it should be Goshem.
Just had me converted, now I'm going to reconvert.
The first pamphlet that appeared in Jerusalem in 1981 is called Meshiv Harua. And this is written by someone just as pious, no less pious than the Chaim Krauss. Actually, this is a Bratslav Rafosid, who said that in Bratslav community we have a Kabbalah to say Goshem. And we will continue to say Goshem. All Jews should say Goshem, and it is an error to recite Mashiv Ruach Umorid HaGeshem. And to give you a sense of what's being said in part in this controversy, I'm reading from the first page of the first pamphlet in support of Goshem. Mashekosav HaMethabe, what Rabbi Krauss wrote in his first volume, Odos Mashehei HaGoner B'Frayim Bar Yansky, Asher bevo lispale lefnei hateva eto moron hagri salvechi. If he ro moron lomar ha geshem besego tachas aginul hinei ani she'alti es pi b'no chvod harav hazon reinu b'spoil. I went to Velbel's son, who's alive and well, Rabbi Rafael Soloveitchik, who amar li shelo hoyu dvar meyol. Says, it's not true. V'yodua lo b'zirur, and he knows with certainty, she'oviv hagon hoya omer hagoshem b'kam. And he testifies that his father, the Rabbi Brit, always said, mashavua umborit hagoshem. The Gan who knows pain, and he, Rabbi Foyle, the son, it's his practice to say, "Mashiv ruach murder goshen." The Gan achareishi shemati advar mavur ma'elu shalachti nishol mabuti or avagon befrayim for the yanski. I then sent to the very man that was quoted by Rabbi Krauss. I sent him a letter asking him what really happened. What happened? Omnam kainu zeh asher ana. This is what he answered me. Omnam kainu shagon ha. Before I went up to Davin, Velvel Soloveitchi told me there's a practice to say Geshem with the Segol. Ach mashekosav hamechaber hanal b'shmo shekiilu hithiro moron lomar tevas hageshem b'segol lo hayu dvorim meyol. It's not true, and I was never told by Velvel to say mashav ruach morit hageshem. This is going back and forth. There's much more to it, but that gives you a sense of part of the argument. He did something even better, and I have to give the author of the Meisha Veruah credit. His name is Rabbi Marzel. He decided to go to libraries and look at every siddur that exists, every person's siddur, to see whether it's really true that the first siddur to read Mashu Ruach Umorj HaGoshem was the siddur that was printed by Isaac Satanov in 1785 in Berlin. And he fortunately was able to locate two siddurim that were printed before Satanov's siddur. One was printed in 1726, before the Haskalah movement had begun, and another was printed even earlier, in the 17th century, by a famous rabbi named Rabbi David Leder, chief rabbi of Amsterdam, an Ashkenazi chief rabbi of Amsterdam in the 17th century, and in their siddurim, it already says, Goshen, Mashiv Ruach, and Morit HaGoshen. And so argues Rabbi Marzal in his pamphlets and books, it is not true that Mashav Ruach Amorit HaGoshem was instituted, invented by the Maskilim, but in fact we find, true, not many Siddurim, but some Siddurim that already have the form Goshem long before the Haskalah came into existence. Had the controversy ceased at this point, I wouldn't even talk about it, although it's interesting. But things got worse, because third parties entered the fray, aside from the two parties that I just mentioned. Books and pamphlets began to appear in Bnei Brak and in Yerushalayim, for Goshem, for Geshem. It became a very heated controversy. Insults were passed between rabbis and others. Several of the people who published in this controversy suffered from short fuse and vitriolic pens, and name calling followed. I'm not going to read the literature to you, but to give you a sample, Rabbi Marz was cited as proof, a siddur printed by Rabbi David of Lida, chief rabbi Ashkenazi of Amsterdam in the 17th century. The other side said, from him, you bring a proof? Rabbi David of Lida was a Shabtai Tzvinik, and he was put in Cherem in his lifetime. And from his siddur, you can't prove whether or not to read it to the Kamat or not, and so on. Turns out that there are several Jews living in Jerusalem right now who are descendants of the daughter
of Leda. Yeah, as a member of our community.
One of these is a very famous Jew who I actually happen to know. His name is Rabbi Anshin, and so he published a book with a letter. And I'll just read part of the letter, one of his letters in the controversy. This is dated 1981. Ani HaFos Mirmato, his name is Rabbi Yisrael Nachman Anshin. Moche Nimrotos Neged HaKutus M'chalte Chayim B'Chesed. B'chlau V'Neged Reb Chaim Kraus. V'Neged Reb Munshein. Hold on, list of others. Yifrat. Sheheyezu Hischatzeh Tulshonos Gassim Neged HaSefer HaKadosh. Shel Adoni Ovis Keni Reb David Lida. All these people wrote against my elder Zayder, Reb David Lida, and they said that you can't trust what he writes, and I indicated why to you. So he says, here I am in Yerushalmi, all my children are learning in Yeshiva, we are the descendants of Reb David Lida, just because the Chimishum Shatem Kibaltem Elasechem, just because you have a Kabbalah, Shetorach Lomar Bestego, Hutro Haritsua, Lipsol, Sadoni Abishkeni, do you have a right, does that give you a right to disqualify my elder Zayder, Reb David Lida? Then follows in a very angry tone, and so on. L'chein l'dati atem tzuchim l'farsim b'rabim sh'atem v'akshim mechila mikvod harabonim, etc. For me, and I'm having trouble making a shidduch for my children because of the slander that you repeated about my elder Zayder. Okay. This has become, a very bitter controversy. Actually, one of my favorite lines in this whole controversy from all these various pamphlets and volumes is a letter written by a member of a Bezmin in Jerusalem. They were supporting Geshe. One of the rabbis at the beginning of the letter writes as follows. Chavod HaRav, Reb Chaim Kraus, etc. And you know, usually a letter has a date. And clever Jews, when they write a date, they don't just write the year 5750 or 49, whatever the date may be, but they write a gematria that's equivalent to that. So this rabbi wrote, Dear Rabbi Kraus, and then the copy has the date, and the date reads as follows. Quote, Geshem lo bekomat elo besegol begematria tofshin lamitet. He wrote it. And it worked.
It
actually worked. You can figure out. But the problem is, it works both ways. If you just as easily read Geshem lo besegol elo bekomat. Anyway, what's clear from this controversy is the absolutely awesome power of Minhag. It is true, in medieval Europe, virtually all Jews pronounced it Geshem. That's proven by an examination of Hebrew manuscripts from before printing with vocalization, and virtually all of them have Geshem. Also, virtually all printed Siddurim, not all, but virtually all, as Rabbi Yaakov Emden and so on, had Geshem. And despite the fact that, for whatever reason, because the grammarians came to the fore in the 18th and 19th centuries, and because of Eisenheim there, and indeed Satanov, Goshem began to reign in the 19th century. It is amazing. It is amazing that there are Jews, despite it all, 100 years later, who will remember, who will have a Kabbalah from their grandmother, wherever it may be, but they will remember, they'll go and research it, and they will find that the fact is that the practice used to be Geshem, and they will reinstitute it. And let me assure you, that if you make a study of Siddurim being printed from 1989 on, you will find that Geshen is back in business and may be here to stay for a while. For those interested, by the way, I did check with Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik and with Rav Aaron Soloveitchik to find out what their practice is and what the practice of brisk is. I asked Rabbi Yoshe Baer Soloveitchik years ago, and he says you must say Geshen, Ashavua, Morita Geshen. I asked Rav Aaron Soloveitchik about a year ago, and he said Goshen. And both assured me, I did also, both assured me that they were not telling me what the practice of the family was. They had the foggiest notion what their father was for Moshe Soloveitchik. They simply telling me what their practice was. To say the moral lesson of this story is it's just amazing to see how tenaciously Jews hold on to Minhagim, and despite it all, they're not forgotten. It might be worthwhile here to read to you a passage from Rabbeinu Bakya ben Usher, al Torah. Rabbeinu Bakya ben Usher was a Spanish Jewish exegete who lived at the end of the 13th, beginning of the 14th century. He was a disciple of the Rashba. And Parshas Vayera, he writes as follows. Lest you think it a minor matter when you say Geshem or Goshem, I bring this passage to your attention. Even if you didn't read these six volumes and the pamphlets, for those people who wrote these volumes, this is hardly a minor matter. But even for us, it may not be a minor matter, because this is what Rabbeinu Bakya says. He's not discussing specifically the issue of Goshem Geshem, but he says, L'chach hamosif nekuda ogora machra yisa'olam. Anyone who adds a dot in the vocalization of any word, misvocalizes the Hebrew word, either adds a dot or takes away a dot, changes segol to a chiret or to a feret, or vice versa. Zehu ha-hefresh ha-godol sheyesh b'toresenu ben kamat kopatach, ke-hefresh sheyesh ben or l'choshech, u-ben kodesh l'chol. V'chein matzinu sha-machlif patach b'kamat, anyone who switches a patach for a komat, lo yimolek me'achas mishnayim, he will fall into one of two traps. O yaharos hakavona, either you will misinterpret the word, o yavo lide kfiro, or you will become a heretic. And mitam zeh, and because of this, nimshu ha'otiyot l'guf, that's why, and this is a medieval Hebrew proverb, here it's in Rabbeinu Bakya, also Persian Zohar, mitam zeh, nimshu ha'otiyot l'guf, the letters of the Hebrew Bible are considered like the body, v'hanekuda v'neshama, and the vocalization, the kamat, patach, tzera, are like the soul, because just like the soul animates the body, so too it is the vocalization that takes the dead letters and turns them into words so that you can pronounce them. It's the vocalization that provides the vowel, the sound to help you pronounce the letters. I'll read that last line again, controversy in the last 10 years. If you look at the Machzor, I have no idea, again, what the practice is in Young Israel of the Hillcrest, you will find that the Kiyos of Shofar that are recited, especially the Kiyos before the Shemoneh Esrei, there are a series of Yehi Ratzon that appear in the Machzor. They recite them in the...
No.
It is announced not to recite them?
Correct.
In Armenia.
Okay.
Well, we'll find out whether you do right or not. In the Yirat Zone, and I'll read to you one of the Yirat Zones, Yirat Zone of Panepa, Shekias, after the kios are recited, we recite a prayer and we say, may it be acceptable before you, O God, Kiyo, Shvarim, Truot, Kiyo. After the Kiyos are recited, we recite a prayer, and we say, may it be acceptable before you, O God, that the various Kiyos and so on and so forth that we glue, Shanachnu Token, Tehei, Miru, Kemes, Biuriya, Ayidei, Hamamuna, Kishem Shekibalto, Ayidei, Eliyahuzal, the Yeshua, Sar Haponim, the Sar Metatron, we pray to God, and we say to God, we hope that He will accept our appeals, that they will be wrapped by certain angels and presented to the Lord, an angel by the name of Tartiel, an angel by the name of Elijah, and Yeshua, and an angel by the name of Yeshua, which is best translated as Jesus. Sar HaPnim doesn't mean the minister of interior, but Sar HaPnim is a technical term that occurs in the Gemara and in the Kabbalah for that angel on the highest rung who actually serves God directly. Unless you think I'm inventing this, I will pass this around so you can see the Hiratzon. It's in this Makor on page 168.
No.
You'll hear in a minute some of the problems. Now, in order to justify the practice of the Young Israel, I will immediately inform you the following, that we have a sefer called Maaseh Rav, the Minhagim of the Gaon of Vilna. So we're back in the 18th century now, and with regard to the Gaon of Vilna, we're told as follows, Shum Mizmor, Kodem Kiyas Shofar, Ein Omrim, the Vilna Gaon did not allow anyone to recite the Hiratzon that occur in the Maaseh. No reason is given. You just hear the practice that the Gaon of Vilna did not recite the Hiratzon. In the Minhagei Chasam Sofer, in the official list of the various practices of the Chasam Sofer, 19th century Pressburg, today it's Bratislava, Lo Omar HaYihiratzon Shebein Bein HaKios. But some sofer did not recite the Yihiratzon. Once you take a bite, the challah, after you said Hamotzi Lechem in Aretz, you can talk as much as you like during the soup. You don't have to finish even more than the Kazayas. The fact is, there is no Yihiratzon between the bracha, the Birkas Kios HaShofar, and the first blowing of the shofar. The shofar is blown immediately. You already have no hefsek. After you blew the first kios, it's technically not a hefsek, and certainly according to most poskim, it's not a hefsek. So that, but you should know that that actually appears not from the Mishnah Berurah himself, but he cites an earlier sefer that mentions this. That mentions this, right? Very other kinds of reasons have been presented for this practice. The Munkat Shereva, who wrote many, many studies of the Siddur, was very interested and published his own Siddur, by the way, which is a classic and a very important Siddur in terms of its version, his thoughts. Munkat Shereva writes as follows, Alkeinu viyacha vazeh shehinei shamanu acharei shekosu shom ve'yirotzon achat kiyas tashrat v'yeshua sar haponim. The Munkat says, you want to know why you shouldn't recite it? Because in that machzor that's passing around now, you will find that in one of the Hiratzon, there is a reference to Yeshua Sar HaPonim, the Sar Metatron. U'bishum makom lo nimso shezeh shein Sar HaPonim. Nowhere in all of Jewish literature is there a malach by the name of Yeshua, Jesus. There's no such person anywhere in all of Jewish literature, and the Munkatcha tells you that. You can trust the Munkatcha. He knew Jewish literature well. There is no Yeshua Sar HaPonim. Shumakom Nitzo Shezeh Shem Sar HaPonim Rak Metatron Hu Sar HaPonim. The only archangel ever called Sar HaPonim, the quotes, minister of interior, is Metatron, who is a malach, who's mentioned in Shas and in Kabbalistic literature, and is almost the chief of all the angels. There is such an angel, the patron, and he is sometimes referred to as Sar HaPnim, the one who actually serves God. But there is no Yeshua Sar HaPnim. Ubisidurim, Yeshadim, Bisidur HaShalot, plus Amsterdam, and the Mulkat Shemantin, he checked earlier editions, Nimtzah, Yeshayahu. Doesn't say Yeshua, it says Yeshayahu. He wrote some of Shainu. Abelo Yeshua. Shehu kemo shame shekinu hamesisim lahayodua rahman alisan. You want to know where this Yeshua Sarapim comes from? Him? The Munkach says, you want to know why you shouldn't recite it? Because in that machzor that's passing around now, you will find that in one of the Hirotzons, there is a reference to Yeshua Sarapanim, the Sar Metatron. Ubishum makom lo nimso shezeh shame Sarapanim. Nowhere in all of Jewish literature is there a Malach by the name of Yeshua. Yeshua, Jesus. No such person anywhere in all of Jewish literature. And the Munkacher tells you that. You can trust the Munkacher. He knew Jewish literature well. There is no Yeshua Sar HaPanim. Ubishum makom nimso shezeh shame Sar HaPanim rak metatron hu Sar HaPanim. The only archangel ever called Sar HaPanim, quotes, minister of interior, is Metatron, who is a Malach, who's mentioned in Shas and in Kabbalistic literature, and is almost the chief of all the angels. There is such an angel, Metatron, and he is sometimes referred to as Sar HaPnim, the one who actually serves God. But there is no Yeshua Sar HaPnim. Ubisidurim, Yeshadim, Bisidur HaShalot, plus Amsterdam, and the Munkat Shemantin, he checked earlier editions, Nimtzah, Yeshayahu. Doesn't say Yeshua, it says Yeshayahu. He wrote some of Shainu. Avalo Yeshua. Shehu kemo Shem Shekinu HaMesisim LaHayodua Rahman Alisa. If you want to know where this Yeshua Sarapim comes from, this was placed into the Siddur. It was inserted into the Siddur by missionaries, by those who would mislead Jews. And some missionary managed to get into a printing press, and he put into the Machzor a reference to Jesus, so that he could prove to Jews that in your own Machzor, you will find a reference to the founder of Christianity. And this has now remained in all our machzorim. May God save us. And so continues the Munkacher. It needs to be removed from every machzor. And many of your machzorim, go home and check your machzorim, you won't find it. It's already been removed from many machzorim. But this is the Munkacher's reason. So we have reason one was because of hefsek, the Mishnah Berurah. Reason two why you shouldn't recite it. The Munkacher's reason is that it has to do with Christianity. The third suggestion comes from still other rabbis, and that is that this has to do with the founder of a Jewish sect in the 17th century, Shabtai Tzvi. And it was Shabtai Tzvi and his enthusiast, the false messiah, who inserted this reference to Yeshua Sar HaPnim.
That be under the influence of Islam, where Jesus is an angel?
Yes. It happens to be that the Sabbateans, classic Sabbatean teaching, and in the teaching of Shabtai Tzvi, there is an attempt to harmonize Jewish, Christian, and Muslim teaching. So in all sorts of Sabbatean writings, there are references to the founder of Christianity, and indeed the founder of Islam, as being prophets of sorts, in one form or another. It's no accident also that Shabtai Tzvi converted to Islam. So there is a certain relationship, and that's precisely why in a book published in the 19th century by a Sephardic rabbi, the name of the book is Sefer Bet Din. In this book, he says specifically that this whole prayer should not be recited, and the Shem Yeshua Sar HaPnim Niralisha Kalkola Zo Pluya Ba'anshe Shabtai Tzvi. This was invented by the followers of Shabtai Tzvi, who we know influenced the Siddur in a variety of ways, but we don't have the time here to discuss how. But the claim now is that they put in this reference Yeshua Sar Hapnim. Very good. We'll get to it.
Okay.
It was suggested that this may be a typo, but a typo for what? But you'd have to explain it, but you're saying it might be a typographical error, but we're going to have to know an error for what? We'll see.
We'll see.
Okay. All right. We'll see what it's all about momentarily. There's still another argument put forward.
I lost it.
Okay. One other argument that's put forward, which is a very interesting argument, that is, it should not be recited because we as Jews do not pray to angels, ever. We want to pray, we have a direct line to God. And this Yehiratzon, which conjures up angels and says, we turn to the angels and we pray that the angels take our tios, bring those tios to the Lord God, and through their merit and so on and so forth, we should have merit. This is a kind of praying to angels, to an intermediary, or praying through an intermediary, which Judaism will not allow. And to give you a sample of where we find this kind of argument, and probably the best formulation of a striking one that I've ever seen of it, appears in the Minhagim of Reb Chaim Volozhin. Here are the official customs of Reb Chaim Volozhin, who was a disciple of the Vilna Gaon and the founder of the Vilna Yeshiva at the beginning of the 19th century. And we read as follows. And this, Shamati, this is a student of Reb Chaim writing about Reb Chaim in the synagogue Friday night. And these two angels come with the Jew to his house and they take a look. If they see that the table is set and the candles are lit and so on, and Shabbos has been welcomed in this home, then the two angels must recite a blessing in the name of God. If, however, the table is not set and candles are not lit, then in the name of God, instead of a blessing, the opposite of a blessing comes forward. But the angels are agents of God. You can't pray to the angels. The angels are automatic agents who simply take a look and see what's done and do what God has ordered them to. This is Reb Chaim Volozhin's view. Okay. Reb Chaim Volozhin was aware of that and discusses it. In this, and I'm going to give you the reference. I don't want to take the time now, but he does discuss that, and this is called Sha'arei Rachamim, page 17. All right, so then you'll have the Minhagim of Reb Chaim Volozhin, and he immediately raises those and other verses and responds, he dismisses them as being quite different from these prayer strangers.
Also the Yerushan by Bichas.
Yeah, there are many such.
There's also praying.
There are many, and he would remove all anything that has to do or smacks of praying to an angel. He will not allow those other passages. Swiftly by simply saying the following. Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos, just to give you the background of Shalom Aleichem, that two angels accompany Jews when they return home from the synagogue Friday night. And these two angels come with the Jew to his house and they take a look. If they see that the table is set and the candles are lit and so on, and Shabbos has been welcomed in this home, then the two angels must recite a blessing in the name of God. If, however, the table is not set and candles are not lit, then in the name of God, instead of a blessing, the opposite of a blessing comes forward. But the angels are agents of God. You can't pray to the angels. The angels are automatic agents who simply take a look and see what's done and do what God has ordered them to. This is Reb Chaim Volozhin's view. Okay. Reb Chaim Volozhin was aware of that and discusses it. In this, and I'm going to give you the reference. I don't want to take the time now, but he does discuss that, and this is called Sha'arei Rachamim, page 17. All right, so then you'll have the Minhagim of Reb Chaim Volozhin, and he immediately raises those and other verses and responds, he dismisses them as being quite different from these prayer strangers. Yeah, there are many such
issues. There's also praying to
angels. There are many, and he would remove all anything that has to do or smacks of praying to an angel, he will not allow. Those other passages. Swiftly by simply saying the following. The reason that was presented for not reciting the Yehi Ratzon, the reason given as hefsek, as I say, is really dismissed by most poskim as not really being relevant. Once the first tios were blown, technically there no longer is really a hefsek here. So that probably would not have been the motivation for all variety of people not to recite it. It's certainly not a strong enough motivation. The reason that malachim cannot be prayed to, they are not free agents. You can only pray directly to God. Yes, there is such a view in Jewish teaching. This view appears in Rav Chaim Volozhin, but I already indicated there is another voice. Judaism speaks in many voices, and there is another voice, a strong voice, a Kabbalistic voice, which says that indeed angels are free agents. You all heard of fallen angels. Fallen angels does not originate with Christianity. That occurs in good Jewish texts, the notion of fallen angels. Well, it can only be a fallen angel if that angel is a free agent. Otherwise, it can't be a fallen angel. It certainly can't be punished for what it did. So that apparently is not the real reason. The notion that this has something to do with Shabtai Tzvi and his teaching and was inserted into the Siddurim and the Masorim as a way of inserting Sabbatian theology into the Jewish Machzor, that can very easily be disproven by a Siddur that I brought with me, and I bring it to your attention because anyone doing research in Siddur needs this Siddur. This is the Siddur of Reb Hertz, it's called. It's not the Hertz Siddur. This is Hei Yud Reish Tzavi. He was a great Kabbalist. This siddur that I'm holding in my hand is a photomechanical reproduction of a siddur that was printed in the year 1560 in Germany. Now, this siddur, printed in 1560 in Germany, has all the Hiratzons with all the same Hiratzons that appear in that Machzor. And this is 1560. When did Shabtai Tzvi appear on the scene? The 17th century. Shabtai Tzvi was born in 1626. He died in 1676. Therefore, it's quite clear that the Hiratzons have nothing to do with Shabtai Tzvi. They already were in existence before Shabtai Tzvi was born. Finally, the suggestion that this has something to do with Christianity and Yeshua is a reference to Jesus, this also can easily be dismissed. Although many people think so, we will see immediately that it's not the case. And what is the case is the following. All the old Siddurim, by that I mean Siddurim from when printing began at the end of the 15th century until about 1560, the Siddur I'm holding in front of me. Each of the Tkios, the three groups of Tkios, has a secret code. You know them, we all know them as Tashrat, Tashat, Takat. Tough standing for Kia, Reish Trua, Shvarim Trua, alright, that's the code. That was not the code that used to appear in the Machzorim. In all the old Machzorim, the code was, and it's very easy to see, Kuf Reish Kuf, Kia Trua, Kia Trua, Kia, Kuf Karak, Kashak, right, Kia Shvarim Kia, Kashrak Kia Shvarim Trua Kia. And in these early Kabbalistic prayers, these words, Kashrak, Kashak, Karak, referring to the groups of the walls blown, their numerical value was written right next to them. So, Kashrak, Kuf, Shin, Reish, Kuf equals what? Mathematicians here? Kuf, Reish, Shin, Kuf? 700. Okay, Kashak, Kuf Shin Kuf, 500. All right, Karak, Kuf Reish Kuf, 400. Kuf Reish Kuf, 400. And what it says in the Hiratzon by Karak, and that's the one that interests us because that's the one that has Yeshua in it, it says Karak is gematria of 400. This is a Kabbalistic formula, and that is true. Which is gematria? Eliyahu Hanavi Zochor Latov. You go home and figure it out. 400. Eliyo Hanovi Zocho Latov equals Karak equals 400. And this also equals, and I wish I had a blackboard in front of me, Yeshaya Yud Shin Ayin Yud Hey Hey. Two Hays. Figure it out. Yud Shin Ayin Yud Hey Hey is 400. That's what it says. And Yeshaya is Sar Hapnim. It says Yeshaya Sar Hapnim. And he is Metatron. Now, I examined early Kabbalistic texts, which you can do on your own. There is an early Kabbalistic work called Sefer HaChesek, which talks about the angels, and it says, gives Metatron as the greatest of the angels, and then it says Metatron has 70 names. And name number 64, take my word for it. Name number 64 of Metatron is Yeshaya, only with one hey. His name is Yud Shin Ayin Yud Hey. But that doesn't equal 400. Yuchi and Ayin Yud Hey will only get you 395. So in the earliest Siddurim it says Yuchin Ayin Yud Hey Hey is Gematria is 400, and it's just another name for Metatron. That's how it appeared in all the early Siddurim. As I say, this is long before Shaksai Tzvi. Now, along came some later printers, and they looked at this Yud Shin Ayin Yud Yeshaya with two Hays, didn't know what it was. It looked very strange. It looked like a kind of a god name. First of all, the last Hay dropped out. Makes sense. It became Yeshaya. Only the Gematria doesn't work anymore. Now it's 395. So they dropped off that last Hay, and there are Machzorim that have Yud Shin Ayin Yud Hay, 395. Came along another printer, and he said, but if it's 395, you're not going to get 400. So he put a Vav in, and we actually have it, and he changed it to Yud Shin Vav Ayin Yud Hey. Yeshuaya, or something like that, right? Vav gives you six, right? You're allowed to be off by one. Always be off by one. We Jews always have an answer. All right. So the next step, we actually have it, Yud Shin Vav Ayin Yud Hey, and then came along somebody else and said it's not right to have a Yud Hey at the end of a word, and he just abbreviated it. He wrote Yud Shin Vav Ayin with a little slash, Yeshua. And that's what we got now, Machzorim, related. The ones that still have it, it's Yeshua. It really goes back to Yeshayo with two Hays, which is Gematria 400, and was Gematria Karak. What confused everything was, is in later years, they no longer use those symbols of Kashra, Kashak, and Karak, but now, in our Machzorim, we use Kashra, which is Gematria nothing. Nothing in the Hebrew works anymore, because it's all confused. And indeed, give the Chassam Sofer credit, because the Chassam Sofer discusses this. Remember, I read you in a minute, he said he doesn't know who to bring this Kiyos to Kodesh Kodesh. Anyway, I went long enough. I simply wanted to show you that there are many claims of Christian influence, Haskalah influence, Sabbatian influence on Jewish custom and practice. In some instances, it is true, and in the lectures we've had seen so far, you've seen some instances. It's certainly true that there's Kabbalistic influence. Everything you heard about the Hiratzons now, that has to do with Kabbalistic influence. You won't find a word about this anywhere in the Talmud. Here again, those of you who do recite it, you are under the influence of the Kabbalah, and these are changes that were instituted by the Kabbalah in the Jewish prayer book. Thank you.